this person is definitely not a hobbit. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And that reference may be a little obscure, but they'll get it later on.
Well, you know, Chuck, considering the fact that we're just past the election, we're recording this as the polls are closing and early voting is rolling in, so we're going to wait until our Saturday program to really give you a breakdown of the election, our thoughts on the turnout, and what caused the turnout to be the way it was. And so if you're looking for that, you're going to have to wait until Saturday. However, we decided that what we were going to try to do today was to talk a little bit about some fundamentals. And Chuck, it was interesting because one of the fundamentals that we talk about on this program quite a bit, and you and I share when we teach classes at Camp American or when we teach the Institute on the Constitution courses, is that adherence to our constitutional form of government is a precursor to anything else that we do politically or in the body politic in this country. One of the ways in which we call for that re-embracing, I suppose, of those fundamental virtues of the Constitution is through calling the courts to stand on what's called original intent, or you've heard it called strict constructionism.
One of the tenets, one of the things that you can always count on from people like us who take that originalist position, if you will, is that we're consistent. In fact, people will say, you're too predictable. I can always tell what you're going to say about this, that, or another thing. Well, first of all, that's not true, because they assume that I'm going to take at least something the same way they do, and that is on a pragmatic basis. But the fact is, I am pretty predictable. If you can look at something and know what the words mean, then I'm pretty much there. That's how I will interpret it. I will interpret it according to the more or less the literal meanings of the words. Now, I'm fully aware that things are nuanced and that, you know, sometimes people hide things behind certain things. Believe me, that consistency, though, that I have in reading documents that way allows me the freedom to go through and say, I know what I think about this, but I also know what you think about this because I know your mindset better than you know mine.
Yes. And that seems to be a very, very common theme, but it's one that I really, from my perspective, I don't mind it if people think that they know my mindset because I hope to be consistent in how I view things and how I put things out in relation to addressing issues, addressing the challenges that face us in our country, because we look at a biblical perspective and then from a perspective. Chuck and I are definitely not guys who stand on being called conservative. We don't puff up our chests in pride at being called conservative. We kind of look at it and say, really? You really think that that's all we are? We consider ourselves to be biblically consistent, and we're not perfect at it. We know the perfection thing's been thrown out too. But we try to be biblically faithful and constitutionally consistent as best as we possibly can. And I think, Chuck, one other person who most people can at least constitutionally consistent is U.S. Supreme Court Associate Justice Antonin Scalia. We've talked a few times about Scalia's positions on before, but it's something that he said here recently about on today's program. Now, the reference to hobbits did that because Justice Scalia was restore original intent and restore that strict from to the journey that Frodo Baggins has to trilogy to end the evil of Sauron and Saruman and destroy the ring of power that has been made to bind all the rest of the nations down in chains to the will of this evil one, Sauron. And so he's kind of likening himself to Frodo, who fights the good fight, but he's not sure he will win. And Chuck, I think that's the thing that caught our attention the most is Antonin Scalia, who's usually a feisty fireball of dissent upon the court. As a matter of fact, I think in the last term, he dissented on 6 or 7 of the last cases that the court brought forward. He was the lone dissenter of about the last half dozen or so, and he did it from a very strong, strict constructionist constitutional standpoint. So,
let's
be clear that he would use that phraseology.
Let's be clear about this, too. So many of our liberal and even some of our conservative friends are so quick to throw him in the same category as Roberts and Thomas and sometimes Kennedy. They're basically saying that this conservative cabal. Well, Scalia has really distanced himself from everybody else who's a quote-unquote judicial conservative by being an originalist. John Roberts proved that he's nothing either like an originalist or a conservative with the whole Obamacare vote, because his entire concern was to protect the reputation of the court from being labeled as an activist court by essentially rewriting the entire Obamacare law so that suddenly it becomes a tax
in order to make it quote-unquote constitutional and say it was a legitimate power of the...
Exactly. So Scalia...
a tax rather than a penalty.
That's right. And Scalia wanted absolutely nothing to do with that. In fact, Roberts, by some reports that I've read, came to Scalia and begged him to sign on to that. Scalia said, under no circumstances am I going to come anywhere near this decision. I don't want anything to do with it. I'm going to be dissenting. And to that we say, good for you. Good for you. You did the right thing. As for the rest of the Supreme Court, well, I don't know. I don't know where everybody else is these days. Thomas, he's usually in the right spot, but in many ways, he's kind of checked out. Roberts, we already see he's going to go the wrong direction. Yeah, so much for conservative-appointed judges.
Right. Samuel Alito is a somewhat mixed bag as well.
Mixed bag, yep.
And honestly, I don't see... I'm with Justice Scalia. I really don't see the tenor changing much, regardless of who has won the office of the presidency after the Tuesday elections. And we may know that by this weekend. We may not yet, depending on how the vote count comes out. But the point is that whether it's a Barack Obama second term or a Mitt Romney first term, the justices who are most likely going to be appointed to replace those who will step down, retire, et cetera, because of age, health, whatever, probably will not change their judicial philosophies much from the prevailing philosophy on the court, which is to be an activist court and to treat the document, the Constitution, as what Oliver Wendell Holmes called a living, breathing document, or an organism that grows in changing times.
Right. Let's let Scalia speak for himself.
Sure.
Reading law, quote, originalism does not always provide an easy answer, or even a clear one. Originalism is not perfect, but it is more certain than any other criterion. And it is not too late to restore a strong sense of judicial fidelity to text, close quote. So here's the question. This book, for that matter, your entire career, represents a sustained, determined effort at restoration. Are you optimistic? How's the project coming?
That's an unfair question. Especially after last term. I dissented in the last six cases announced last term. I don't know. I don't know that I'm optimistic. The fight is worth fighting, win or lose. You know, Frodo, the Lord of the Rings. Look, the problem is that the other approach is enormously seductive. Even for the average citizen, it's seductive to think that the Constitution means what it ought to mean. It's a living Constitution. Anything I care passionately about, it's right there in the Constitution. You know, people used to say when they don't like something that's going on, they say, there ought to be a law. There used to be a comic strip that you know, there ought to be a law about people playing boomboxes in the park and stuff like that. People don't say that anymore. They say, it's unconstitutional. If they really feel passionately about it. And it is even more seductive to judges. It's a wonderful thing to have a constitutional case, and you're always happy with the result because it means exactly what you think it ought to mean.
And there it is, Barry. He has hit the nail smack on the head.
He absolutely has.
It's seductive to both people who want the Constitution to say what they want it to say, and judges who have a sense that their power is limitless.
Yes.
Because the Congress refuses to discipline them. And in fact, they're supposed to also be disciplined by the Supreme Court itself. And the Supreme Court refuses to discipline them. So therefore, they've got this idea that they can do anything they want, anytime they want to do it, and no one's going to say anything.
Exactly. And if they do it in a way that satisfies a Democratic majority of the electorate, then the electorate's going to be just fine with it. So in other words, if you can figure out what the will of the people is and vote that way, then you want a living constitution so that everybody stays happy with you and you're giving the people what they want, sort of like bread and circuses during the Roman Empire.
Charlie Smith always used to say, our old friend Charlie Smith, he always used to say, don't kid yourself, the Supreme Court, most of the justices on the Supreme Court wet their finger and stick it in the air to see which way the wind's blowing, just like everybody else.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Because they don't want to go down in history as the worst Supreme Court justice in the history of the court. They all want to be Oliver Wendell Holmes or John Marshall or Felix Frankfurter or, you know, somebody who has become famous for their jurisprudence.
Well, I hate to bust their bubble, but if they're emulating Oliver Wendell Holmes, they're already emulating the worst justice that's ever sat on the Supreme Court.
Felix Frankfurter and, yeah.
Exactly. Well, but Chuck, you know, I think it's interesting because Scalia always has a great turn of phrase. And so when he compared himself to Frodo, it was intentional because he's right. That was the whole concept behind this idea in Tolkien's books, the trilogy of The Lord of the Rings, was the ring of power, the one that united them all, was one that seduced people who were prideful or who were self-centered or who lusted for power or who wanted things their way. And it was the little hobbit dragons who, in many ways, at least written by Tolkien, was guileless and who just wanted the basic peace of the Shire again. But he took it on because he felt a great sense of responsibility and didn't want to let others around him down in the fellowship, and so he bore the burden. So I think it's interesting he uses this idea of it being seductive to have a living constitution, because that's the whole point. But in order to break the power of evil, the ring had to be destroyed. And ultimately, to break the power of the runaway court and people who want to bend the law to their own ends, there has to be a destruction of this idea of a living constitution. Now, our big problem, though, Chuck, is mainly what's happening is people would rather destroy the constitution and the provisions in it rather than to destroy their fantasy that they've made up around it.
Oh, absolutely. They want what they want, and they'll destroy everything else to get what they want.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting because that whole interview was based upon he was doing a tour talking about his new book, Justice Scalia's new book called Reading Law, The Interpretation of Legal Texts. And it's funny because as we were talking about recording, and I saw this and read it the other day, I stopped by my local library tonight before we got on the air, and I've actually got a copy of this book in my hand. It's about 575 pages, and I am looking forward to digging into this.
And you've got a lot of digging to do with 575 pages. But, yeah, that's not the kind of book that you sit down on a Sunday afternoon and decide you're going to finish it up by the end of the day.
No. It's thankfully, it's not in as small a print as most legal tomes are, but it's full of meat, and so it's going to take a while to dig through it. It basically says he wrote this with his co-author, Brian Garner, and I'll just read a quick thing from the blurb from the jacket. It says, Scalia and Garner carefully and engagingly explained 57 valid canons of construction and dispel 13 false notions about legal interpretation, using hundreds of reported cases to illuminate their discussions. They have written with characteristic lucidity and verve to produce a rare treatise, a highly readable one that will help anyone involved in a dispute over words, words, words. So in other words, he's saying that there's really only 13 false ideas about interpretation of the law that's causing all this trouble.
But it took him 575 pages to get it all out.
Well, it did. It did.
Report when that's done, and with that being said, we're, of course, out of time. as always. But we will continue not talking about the election until Saturday. We promise to give you a little break until Saturday. So join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.